So we have looked at the life of C.K. Blandin and at his career up to the 1916 point when he purchased the paper company on behalf of the St. Paul Papers. Now let's begin to trace his influence on Grand Rapids and, as well, the influence of Grand Rapids on him. After the arrangements for the purchase of the Itasca Paper Company in September of 1916, Blandin left Kaukauna and came back to Grand Rapids and spent several days there to oversee the operation and to begin to learn exactly what it was that he had purchased and what he has. Then he went back to St. Paul. He went via Duluth because he had to inspect several mining properties on the Mesaba Range. But he soon established a pattern for carrying out his new responsibilities as president of the Itasca Paper Company. At varying intervals, he was chauffeured to Grand Rapids to spend a few days tending to mill interests and then driven back to his home and office in St. Paul. Blandin was strongly attracted to Grand Rapids from his first association with the town. He knew and understood small towns, and he liked them. In Grand Rapids, Charles Blandin could have a life of his own away from family tensions and frustrations. Grand Rapids became, indeed, a home away from home, a kind of haven. When the Benedictines closed the hospital and the Villa Scholastica Academy, the Itasca Paper Company acquired the school buildings of the villa, which were just across the river from the mill. One of the structures was remodeled to serve as what was appropriately called the villa, for the use of Blandin and others involved in mill business. There, Blandin had a comfortable place to stay and entertain his new Grand Rapids friends and associates. Not long after his visits began, Blandin gave a dinner party for the Bossards, the Guns, and others, and it was so elaborate as to be described in the Herald Review as a banquet and musical entertainment. Blandin liked gardens and trees, and in Grand Rapids he could also indulge himself in that regard. He soon instituted a program of landscaping to improve the appearance of the mill grounds. In Grand Rapids, Blandin easily assumed and soon began to enjoy a role he had not found elsewhere. In Grand Rapids, he was approached with great respect as an influential St. Paul capitalist, and as the new leader, the new force behind the town's all-important paper industry. When the St. Paul Dispatch printed a long article on the company's 1916 purchase of the paper mill, Blandin's name wasn't even mentioned in it. But in Grand Rapids, both newspapers interviewed him, quoted him at length, and gave prominent coverage to everything he did and said. Blandin could be sure his thoughts on almost any subject would be taken seriously and listened to attentively in his new community. That was clearly demonstrated when, a few months after the purchase of the mill, unsuccessful ex-produce manager Blandin, he'd lost that business in Wisconsin, but now he passed judgment on the potatoes that were the agricultural pride of the farmers of Itasca County. He ordered a sample and took them back to St. Paul. When he next returned, the Herald Review reported on the front page that the potatoes had aroused his enthusiasm to a high point. Blandin was quoted, "I never knew what potatoes were until I tasted those from Itasca County." The story continued, explaining that Blandin had found the color, shape, and flavor excellent, and he suggested the crop was a splendid opportunity for the region. Blandin said that with a suitable marketing program, he did not take into account the money and expertise that would be required, or any agriculturally related difficulties, but that Itasca County potatoes could become as familiar to the public as sun-kissed oranges. The news writer echoed his sentiments, imagining that the menus of restaurants as famous as Delmonico's in New York might proclaim, "We serve Itasca County potatoes exclusively." No wonder Charles Blandin felt at home and welcome in Grand Rapids. Blandin could always count on an appreciative audience in the town. Once when he chartered an airplane for a quick return to St. Paul, many people went to a farmer's field just east of town to see the elaborate two-passenger Curtiss Oriole airplane boasting a six-cylinder engine and electric starter. The crowd watched with interest as Blandin boarded the aircraft and it bounced down the field for the takeoff, looking at a picture of it, and it is quite an airplane. Very sleek looking. It's a bi-wing. Yeah, very jazzy looking thing. And lots of people indeed standing there watching the whole spectacle. So he boarded it. It bounced down the field for the takeoff. Blandin was the first air passenger to depart from Grand Rapids on what was his own first flight as well. After the 2-hour and 20-minute excursion, Blandin called back to report that he had enjoyed the trip immensely. Shortly after Blandin's association with Grand Rapids began, the Herald Review observed that Mr. Blandin has taken a very active interest in Itasca County's material welfare, and his large influence will, no doubt, be of much benefit to this region. The article continued, he is a progressive man of large affairs who takes a broad view of the potential of this area. The prophecy and the assessment were both accurate. Charles Blandin had much to gain from Grand Rapids, and he had also much to give. Well, when the Itasca Paper Company was purchased by the Dispatch Printing Company, Charles Blandin was granted full control over the Grand Rapids operation. Now we get to what the town was really interested in. What is the future going to be for this paper company? As recorded in the minute book of the Dispatch Printing Company, the new president received no special instructions and was directed to vote the stock of the company as he may deem wise. So responsibility for the manufacture of print paper was solely in his hands. That's a big responsibility. Obviously, he has a great deal to learn and has to learn in this regard. From a Grand Rapids perspective, Blandin assumed the role of an absentee landlord. Nonetheless, from the beginning of his presidency, Blandin had such an aura of energy and progressiveness that he quickly renewed the community's confidence in the future of the paper company. Just 1 month after the sale, the Herald Review reported in a front-page story that many changes could be expected at the mill. Production would increase by 20%, bringing the plant's yearly newsprint output to 10,000 tons. The newspaper stated that this would require additional employees in the power plant and woodyard, thereby creating more jobs in the community, and 20% more pulp cordage would be needed at the mill, a considerable benefit to area loggers, and as they spent their additional dollars to the merchants. The new president of the Itasca Paper Company prepared to implement some major changes in order to accomplish that 20% increase. When the price of newsprint had begun climbing early in 1916, the Kaukauna owners of the mill decided to delay rebuilding the Ford Rainier machine so as not to lose production time. In other words, they wanted to keep it going because they're finally making a profit. But they already paid for $11,500 worth of new parts and additions for the machine. It had been left to wait until the market slowed. Blandin, not mindful of an immediate need for profits and always one to take into account long-range possibilities, decided to rebuild at an early date. An engineer from the Beloit Ironworks arrived to oversee the substantial but delicate process of repairing and altering the great machine. First, a crew did preliminary work in the machine room, and then in November, paper production ceased for 10 days while the men worked on the Ford Rainier, according to the detailed plans that had been prepared in Beloit by its manufacturer. They installed 8 additional dryers. Those were going to be needed because the machine was going to run faster now. It went over those heated surfaces more quickly, so you needed more of them. So 8 dryers installed. They'd been carefully engineered at the Beloit plant to ensure their harmonious incorporation into the nest, as it was called, in the Grand Rapids mill. New and improved gear arrangements guaranteed that the sheet would draw true as the speed of the machine increased. The mill force thoroughly inspected and repaired every part of the Ford Rainier, always according to the Beloit dictum that everything line up true, level, and fit. Mill purchased and installed other equipment. The most notable was a drum barker, particularly appreciated by those who worked in the woodroom. The hand-operated barkers, in use since 1902, comprised a series of knives that pared the log sections removing not only the bark but also a portion of the wood. They required considerable hard physical labor, and as a Grand Rapids lawyer who had once worked summers in the mill recalled, they were as detrimental to fingers as they were to bark. The new barker consisted of a big revolving drum constructed of open metal flats. The cylinder was about 40 feet long and about 12 feet in diameter. Cut logs were introduced into one end and in quite spectacular fashion sprayed with water and vigorously tumbled for 15 or 20 minutes. The bark, abraded from the wood, fell through the slats and was removed by a conveyor system to be dried and later used as boiler fuel. The log sections spilled from the other end of the drum barker, as one papermaker stated, sans overcoat and dignity. Although some additional processing might be required to remove knots, remaining traces of bark or dry rot, the drum barker reduced the amount of wood lost and was much more efficient than the hand barkers. Despite the cost of the new equipment, as Blandon explained to a reporter from The Independent, we think it's money well spent, for it will save the price in wood in a few years, not to mention the saving of labor, as the new machine requires 2 to 4 less men to handle the same amount of wood. In an interview printed in a 1917 issue of The Independent, Blandon expressed his philosophy concerning the need for efficiency in industry. We will not hesitate to discard a machine, even if it's practically new, if we can see where a saving of time, energy, or material sufficient to warrant that change may be afforded. And he went on to explain that that policy was being followed as the water wheels in the dam, which led to the production of the power, were simply to be discarded and replaced with new ones. So all kinds of other things were taking place, too. Lots of new equipment. The place was really humming with energy. The Independent noted at the end of that year of refurbishment that the mill had become a different plant from what it had been a year before. The Herald Review concluded, the new owners of the mill have adopted a general policy of improvement and extension that will mean much to the business life of this community. And so indeed, certainly the paper company was not being neglected, and with a sense of relief, Grand Rapids believed that the future looked pretty good for it.